Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Is that your favorite song, Sagar?
Favorite song?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty rock solid. No idea. Wouldn't say favorite, but there's certainly nothing wrong with it. I feel no shame in saying that.
Majo was asking me, like, when, because we like to let the music go a little bit longer when you come. Like, do you sing along while we wait to introduce you when that music
comes
on? No,
I mean, I don't sing because I don't know when I'm actually going to be on air. Like, there used to be like this when you guys went from having me on hold to having me on air. It used to go like, and then I'd know I was on air. But for some reason, the system's different now and it doesn't do that. So I don't know for sure I'm off air. And I don't trust that I wouldn't end up on the radio singing Justin Timberlake, not knowing I was live. I can't have that happen.
Well, okay. Well, I would never put you live because I control the live button. I would never put you live till I actually say, now we go to Ryan Rashog. Just in case you were coughing or doing something else.
Well, next time then I'll be bellowing it out for sure.
Sure, yeah. Do it. Do it.
Gotta love an early start and no morning skates, hey? I mean, not great for your show, gathering content.
What are you talking about?
Very nice for the reporters.
Trust me, I don't need that content today. Hey, guys, what do you think of Colorado? Yeah, trust me. I was doing cartwheels when there was no morning skate today. I was quite
there
ecstatic.
You go. I'm sure the players were, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I always wonder, there's been a lot of debates over, you know, some guys don't like morning skates. Others still like it. They think it's a good part of the routine. So we'll all depend. It might go by the wayside. We'll see. Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't.
But don't you think you have to have the guys at the rink at least, whether they skate or not?
Not necessary. I think they're grown men. Like, I don't know.
Just let them hang around the hotel. Like when you're on the road, like what are they going to do? Just have them hang around the hotel till time to go to the rink at 4:30?
Yeah, they could. I'm sure they'll figure something out.
You know, go get a bike in or have a meeting or I don't know, something.
Maybe they, maybe
and
they
the
could
other
go,
thing is...
Well, they have naps usually in the afternoon, right? They always have their two-hour nap. So, if I don't know, maybe they could the team could get together and depending on the city, they could go for a nice little team jog.
Go jogging to prepare?
Mm-hmm.
See, I always thought that the morning skate, as much as anything else, was just about keeping the guys out of the clubs the night before. Because, I mean, you arrive in a city, let's say, on a Thursday after a game, and then you've got Friday, and then you play Saturday, and there's no morning skate. Well, I mean, a seasoned partier can easily recover pretty well by 2 or 3 o'clock the next day, right, if you have the time. A lot harder to recover for a morning skate at 9:30 or 10 o'clock the next morning. I thought that's what morning skates essentially were for.
Oh, yeah. But it all depends. You know, some guys, a lot of it just becomes tradition and they're used to it, right? That's why I'm sure veterans who've gotten used to it for 10 years will be like, well, what are you talking about? Of course I want to do it. So I don't think teams will ever completely get rid of them, but you are seeing more and more teams. They never skate on back-to-back games anymore, depending sometimes on travel. So you're seeing it more often now. Probably, I bet you out of the 80 games, there's probably at least 20 that don't have a morning skate.
Yeah, and this is the other thing, too, is that if a team isn't playing very well or if they're not currently in a playoff position or if they're not meeting expectations, then it looks like the coach is wasting time, right? Like, remember when Ralph Krueger came in, he was all going to be all about the optional morning skate. No, it's all optional. It's all optional. Dallas Aikens did the same thing. Give the players the option. These are grown men, da-da-da-da-da. Well, then you lose 4 in a row and your power play is terrible and you're just going to have optional skates. You look like you're wasting time. You look like you're not leaving no stone unturned. You look like you're leaving stones unturned by not taking advantage because there's not a lot of – once the schedule really kicks in, teams don't have a lot of really good practice time. So morning skates end up being extra practice time for them to work on stuff, and it looks bad if a coach isn't taking advantage if they're not in the playoffs. So it ends up being – I think it's as much of an optics thing as anything for teams that aren't playing well.
The Colorado Avalanche, you know, a lot of Oilers fans are saying, hey, look what the Avalanche, they've been a non-playoff team, then they make the playoffs, and they're a non-playoff team, then they make the playoffs, and they kind of continue that trend. And I think the big difference there is, yeah, they're a playoff team, then they're a non-playoff team, then they're a playoff team. They're not 9 years in a row without the playoffs, where the last six, they haven't had a sniff.
Yeah, well, there is inconsistency there, right? But they're not built for consistency. They're built to be. I mean, last year was a kind of one of those years where their analytics were kind of odd, yet they were still one of the better teams in the league. So it was definitely an odd situation for them to get in with numbers the way they were and all that. But they don't have a great decor, right? That's what this team is lacking. I mean, they've got good forwards when they're healthy, although still very young. They're relying on very young forwards in really key positions to be consistent every year. And this year they had a bunch of guys that just weren't. I mean, Matthew Shane had an off year. Gabriel Landeskog had an off year. Ryan O'Reilly's had an off year. Nate McKinnon came back and had a bit of an off year. And then they don't have the decor to sort of back things up when they're not scoring enough goals. And so it results in a team that's not really that close to making the postseason. But their back end is by far their biggest weakness from what I can see.
Oh, yeah. Well, obviously now with Johnson out, that's a huge blow for them. And it illustrates the importance. Plus, they lost Paul Stastny. Like, when you lose the most important position up front, a veteran like that who helped out the other guys, and then you now with Johnson on the back end, yeah, it's just too much to overcome. And it illustrates how important those positions are. The one guy is Matt Duchene, who's really had a down year, Sugar. Like, Duchene doesn't have a lot of points. And this is a guy who was on the Olympic team last year. Like, he's had a really bad season.
Well, 18 goals for him, 28 assists, just 46 points. I mean, this is a player who I think at the start of the season, they're looking at him going, he should probably be able, with the ice time he plays and the opportunity he gets, be a 65 to 80-point player. I mean, that's not out of his reach at all for his skill level and the amount of ice time that he gets. And the natural progression should be, right? I mean, he's pushed. He had 67 points the 1 year. He had 70 points in 71 games in 2013, 2014. So a point a game pace is what they would expect from him coming in, and he hasn't even been close to that. And it's tough. Like, I'm interested to know if he'll even make the world championship team this year, because there's a lot of good young centers, and both he and Nugent Hopkins are among a group of guys that probably would be good for them to go play some more hockey, probably be good for them to go play some games in a tournament like that. But I'm not positive that Duchene's even going to make the cut.
Well, I was looking, I put in my article today, I was like, Claude Giroux, I think, is a lock. And because he didn't make the Olympic team last year, I think he might be intrigued to want to go. Tyler Seguin, Ryan Johansson. Now, Logan Couture, I think Joe Thornton's not going to go. Why would he go? Yeah. I don't see any reason why he would. So there's four. But the right wing, Sugar, is where there's real void for Canada. You've got Jordan Eberle, who, by the way, has the most points of any right winger in Canada, playoff team or non-playoff team. So he's a lock to go. But after that, the non-playoff guys, Jerome McGinley, he never goes to the World Championships. Wayne Simmons, I think he'll go. He's got 29 goals. Then you're like Riley Smith, Brad Boys. I'm thinking you'll move some centermen to play the right wing.
Yeah, well, Mike Hoffman's a right winger too, is he not? Then depending on what happens with
he's a left winger. Stone's the right winger on Ottawa, but I projected Ottawa to go in now. I don't see Boston catching them with Dougie Hamilton injured.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it'll be you missed the center, a pretty important one that I think has a good chance of going ahead of both of those guys, and that's Sean Monahan. He's got almost, I don't know where he's at now. He was at 28 goals a few days ago.
Yeah, he's got one more point than Nugent Hopkins. The big difference, though, between those two is if you look at Hopkins' quality of competition compared to Monahan's, right? Like, Monahan, don't get me wrong, I think he'd get some consideration, but Backlund takes a lot of the tough minutes, which is what an organization should do. I'm not downplaying Monahan. That's how you allow a young guy to develop. It's like, hey, let's not throw him to the wolves. We'll let our veteran guy not produce points and take the tough minutes, and then let Monahan and Goudreau play, the second or third tough minutes and excel and gain confidence.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe Monahan is one of the guys they take that can be a winger if he has to, or can move around the lineup a little bit. So it's going to be tight. I don't think it's a lock. I mean, I think there's a number of guys that immediately go ahead. I mean, Claude Giroux immediately plays ahead of him. Tyler Seguin immediately plays ahead of him. Probably Ryan Johansson plays ahead of him. So that's three guys right there where you're getting into, you're already looking at the number four or five spot if you're not shifted to the wing. So the competition, like, Canada could have a pretty good set of offensive forwards this year.
Oh, very good offensive forwards. Yeah, no doubt about that. Speaking of offensive forwards, Ryan O'Reilly in Colorado today. There's been so much talk about them moving a guy. Do you see him getting moved this offseason?
I don't know why they would. I mean, like, I know that they've got the two centers in Duchene and McKinnon, and O'Reilly makes a pretty good paycheck. I guess it depends. Like they would be in a similar situation than the Oilers in that they would look to rob from Peter to pay Paul a little bit. They'd look to take some of the offense they have up front and bring back a really high quality defenseman. And you could get a pretty high quality defenseman in return for Ryan O'Reilly. So I think if the right move comes along, the right player gets offered and it gives them a chance to fix things on the back end, the way they need to fix things on the back end, then I could definitely see them considering it. But what I would not do if I were Colorado, similar to the Oilers, what I would not do is trade him for two or three pieces that are all maybe a B at best. If you're going to trade Ryan O'Reilly, you need to be standing there going, yeah, but look what we got. We fixed the hole. This is what we've got. Here it is. So I think they need to be careful with moving him, but I could see them needing to shore up the back end and using him to do that for sure. You?
Well, I definitely think so. I know the organization's going to try to mend the fences. They've had some tough negotiations over the years, but the problem is I think they trade him. You know, that's two centermen that they've moved out, and we've seen it here in Edmonton, man. Unless they're going to get a legit center back, that's a trade that I think ends up hurting the team.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've got Duchesne, and they've got McKinnon as their number one and number two centers for the future, right? Duchesne signed long-term. McKinnon will be sooner rather than later. The other thing about trying to trade Ryan O'Reilly is, I mean, he came into the league pretty young. He'll be an unrestricted free agent after next season. So whoever is trading for him is probably going to want to know they can get a deal done, an extension. And it is absolutely in the Avalanche's best interest to have a deal of some sort done with him, or let another team negotiate with him before they complete that trade. Because the value of Ryan O'Reilly as a pending unrestricted free agent versus a guy that's got a 3 or 4 or 5 year deal in his pocket is significantly different. That's what makes moving him a little bit tricky, is just the 1 year left.
It's always interesting. We saw what happens here in Edmonton. You let a young guy go to that final year before he goes to unrestricted free agency, the chances of you keeping him slim to none, unless yeah. You're having very good success as a team.
Yeah, for sure. And Ryan will, I mean, he's not having a great year, which, you know, because teams can sign a guy a year out of unrestricted free agency, right? They can get that deal done ahead of time. Well, Ryan's not having a great year. He hasn't had a great year. So what does that number look like coming off this season? Would he rather play it out again next year and hope to get, you know, 20 to 30 goals like he might expect of himself, and then see what that number looks like? I mean, now might not be the best time for him to negotiate that long-term deal, I guess, is what I'm saying. So,
well, of course not. But the thing, you know, he's in the driver's seat because he has such a big offer. Even if he just gets all they have to do is qualify him to take his rights, he's going to get the same number anyway, right? That's where it's the benefit to the players in their contracts. You know, decent guy, because they're not going to let him walk for nothing, right? So that to maintain his rights, now they got to qualify him. So he's kind of sitting pretty. Right? Like that's the advantage. The Oilers, they didn't take advantage of it the first year with Justin Schultz. Right? And now they're screwed, because Justin Schultz shouldn't be getting paid $3.6 million this year based on how he's playing, but he is, and he might even get a raise again from this team.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You got to be so careful with the way you handle these young assets. And, like, it's funny because you can see the benefit. If you make the right call on a guy, you can see the benefit. So let's say Taylor Hall is healthy and plays really well over the next two seasons and pushes 70 to 80 points. Point a game roughly over the next two seasons. Well, $6 million a year for 80 points is a pretty good contract. That's well worth it. So you look at the risk they took in signing him to that deal, and it pays off because they get him at a nice number and real good production. But you gotta bet right, you gotta guess right, and you can't guess wrong with too many guys when you're handing out those long-term deals. So, teams need to figure it out early if they're going to get those long-term deals done. And you got to guess properly. And O'Reilly, I mean, even at a $5.8 million cap hit for what he's given them this year, that's tough. I mean, that's the production, the contribution is not there to that extent at all. And really, neither is Matt Duchesne. But for O'Reilly, he needs to have a big year next year to get back, you know, like in and around that $6 million plus range is where he's going to want to be. He's not going to want to take pay cut in any way, shape, or form.
Well, he might be if he continues the way he's going. just because at that point, teams in free agency aren't going to line up to just say, okay, wow, this guy is still going to be a $6 million player because he hasn't put up any numbers. Like Matt Duchesne's making $6 million. He's got 46 points. O'Reilly's 5. They both have 46 points. Now, I know it's not just points. I understand that, right? O'Reilly has a reputation of being a good two-way player and everything, but even his numbers, his underlying numbers have not been great either this year.
Yeah, no, and his game is more like when he's playing well, he's a well-rounded guy that's a fantastic two-way player, can be a physical player, but never takes penalties. I mean, remember, was it last season where how long did he go before he even took a single penalty? It was something ridiculous.
So like 60 games or something.
Yeah, he's got a lot of different dimensions to his game. He's a really valuable player. Like And if they didn't have both Duchesne and MacKinnon, I wouldn't even, be talking about it. But I think they're going to want MacKinnon to play in that natural center position. I think, Matt Duchesne is their number one. MacKinnon is their number two, potentially to take over that number one spot. They've got Gabriel Landeskog on a decent deal, like $4.5 million for him. They went a little longer term, and the dollar figure gets richer, but the cap is a decent hit. Actually he's 5.5, but still they've got all these young players on these longer term deals that similar to the Oilers, and some of them make sense. Some of them, the players are going to have to continue to improve for it to make sense. They can't have Matt Duchesne leveling off again for another season at $6 million and be a sub 50, 60 point player.
Oh, not at all. No. Not at all. I expect a little bit of a run-and-gun style game tonight between the Oilers and the Avalanche, strictly because the Oilers can't play lockdown defense. I think Colorado, with their playoff hopes all but extinguished in Calgary 2 nights ago, they will probably be a little bit more loose in their style of play tonight.
Yeah, I think so. And it'll be interesting to see how the Oilers handle maybe a little bit more of a zippy lineup coming at them compared to a bigger, heavier one that they had against the Winnipeg Jets. We'll see if Nikita Nikitin can bounce back from a pretty ugly performance, but he's got some fast young forwards coming at him. So, we'll see what the Oilers have in him. But this is, it's a team that they can compete with. The Oilers are reasonably healthy. They'll miss Boyd Gordon if he's not in the lineup for sure. I would expect they'd put Gazdik in ahead of Fraser.
No, I would hope so.
Yeah, they need to get Gazdik some more games, and they need to have him finish reasonably strong, and then he needs to be... He needs to be a useful player for the mixture. He can't just be a guy that just they're paying him, a whole pile of money to just sit in the minors. So they need to keep him engaged, and he needs to have a good summer, come back maybe a little bit lighter and faster. And he'll still be tough as nails, but I'd like to see him get some games here late in the season.
Shocker, see you at the game.
All right, buddy.